Hello and welcome to Two Blokes Trading. Join us, the two blokes, Tom and Owen, as we dive deep into the complex, exciting and potentially lucrative world of home trading.
Hello and welcome to episode 70 of the Two Blokes Trading Podcast. This week, the payoff to last week's cliffhangers. Did Tom bank his remaining 24 pips? And did Owen buy the fudging dip on cryptos? Also, webinar goodness and an announcement that will help you sleep like a baby. Tom, good afternoon.
What's up?
How you doing, mate? You all right?
Rubbish, thanks for asking.
Okay, good. Oh, my heart goes out to you, Tom. What? Pray tell, what's the problem? Trading related?
No, well, yes, but not why you think. Trading related because I can't trade due to the fact I have no phone line or electricity in my house.
Okay.
But basically, the builders have managed to cut through both the mains power and the phone line to the house. So that's it. I've had to evacuate. And last night, before I evacuated, I had to spend my wife and I spent a candlelit evening with no heating, electricity or cooker.
Proper Stone Age stuff. So you had to go and trade like your flint arrows for the neighbor's rabbit pelts, you know, and that was your trade.
Yeah, pretty much. And I've kind of extracted myself from that. And I'm unfortunately going to have to spend the next 2 weeks at the fortunately, I'm going to have to spend the next 2 weeks at the in-laws, if you're listening, which you do occasionally.
Do they? Oh, right. Never mind. I'm curious, how did a builder cut through? I mean, what?
You don't, mate, honestly.
At the same time.
Don't.
Oh, okay.
Really bad. It basically involved a lorry and overhead cables and driving away, snapping the cable. The lorry then driver didn't bother stopping to tell anybody and just drove off. And then the whole road had to be closed. Police arrived. Honestly.
I have no sympathy. I just think it's funny because I love
to write this shit. Yeah, I know. Anyway, so what about you, mate? How's things?
Well, yes, I am well. Thank you for asking. Yeah, absolutely no problems whatsoever. Right, cliffhangers, mate. So last time we actually spoke about trading on this podcast, almost an entire episode ago now, we left you teetering 24 pips from the biggest win of your life. And I'm sure people are keen to find out, was it a success or are you currently a broken man?
This is not a surprise to the guys in the Facebook group. I may have mentioned it a few times in the Facebook group as well. It did hit its take profit. Thank you very much, Cable and Bank of England. Excellent. For that one. Yeah.
All right. And what was your total pippage?
I'm not the kind of one to, you know, squibble about detail, mate. So yeah, 652 pips.
Strong. That is a strong pip trade. And was it 17R, was it?
17R for those that care. But it's all good. But like I said on the Facebook group, it's keen to, like, it's obviously a very good trade. I'm really happy with it because I stuck to my rules, but that's the only reason that, you know, this trading system has lots of small losers that obviously I'm not going to tell you every time I have a small loser. And then obviously the big winners, and that's the way it works. So don't assume I'm sitting here going, guys, it's amazing you get 17R every time you trade, because that's just not the case. And anyone that tells you that is a lunatic.
Fair dues, yeah, fair one, strong. Well, honesty is paramount here on this show, so I will also tell you about how my little cliffhanger was the crypto kind, and people remember that I got in on Litecoin right at the top, which was, you know, buying the top is always the way to go, I find, with investments. Then, as we were recording, it was plummeting, and anyone that's very vaguely followed cryptos the last few weeks will know that all of them started plummeting on basically the news that China hated Bitcoin, and Jamie Dimon hated Bitcoin, and everyone hated Bitcoin. And so, obviously, Muggins here thought, all right, well, everyone's calling 3,000 as the bottom. I actually did a Fibonacci on it, and it's actually the 61.8 Fibonacci as well. I thought, all right, that's an obvious buy. But it was just absolutely plummeting. it's literally just falling out of the air. And I'm like, maybe I'm not just going to buy at this level because I reckon I'm the Billy Big Bollocks. I'm going to plot a Fib on a Bitcoin chart. So what I did was I waited for a bit of confirmation. Unfortunately, I waited a bit too long and got too much confirmation, bought in on Bitcoin and Ethereum, and that proved to be the retracement and the little correction, and then it went, boo!
So you bought the dead cat bouncing, and yes, then you are now... So how is your wallet? Is it looking healthy?
No.
I'm assuming not.
No, it's not. What's funny is I basically what I've done is I've made all of the mistakes that I made in my early days Forex trading, you know, buying tops, waiting for things to drop, and then buying, as you say, the dead cat bounce. All of the stupid knobby mistakes you make when you first start trading Forex. I've just gone and made in crypto because in my brain, it's a different thing. And I'm not trading like a CFD or anything. I'm just buying the thing.
But mate, it was a Fib retracement. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but if I bought it at the Fib retracement point, I'd be sat on a win, wouldn't I? Or a little bit of money. And you can't have Fib retracements on buy and hold forever strategy. You know, if I was going for an actual, you know, like if I, yeah. Anyway, so there you go. That's me in cryptos. But anyway, buy and hold forever. So hopefully in 10 years, they'll be worth something.
I'm still working on a plan of, I want to work out whether or not you can actually trade it for profit. But anyway, that's another conversation for another day.
Well, you definitely could have done. I mean, the things that happened were so obvious. And all you had to do was place a trade at 3,000 with a decent stop loss. You know, and there are loads of people calling that as the level. It wasn't...
Yeah, well, you can't definitely... You know, you're saying definitely there, mate. You can't definitely say anything. The reason why you didn't get in at that level is because you definitely couldn't say definitely.
Yeah, because I was a poos, yeah.
No, because you're just guessing at that stage. Otherwise, you would have got in.
The phrase catching falling knives. Yes. Anyway, so moving back onto the slightly more firm grounds of Forex trading... people will be wondering, hey, what's going on with the webinar? And the answer is, it's absolutely and totally booked in, and it's coming up pretty soon. So if you're listening to this anywhere near when it was actually released, it's on the Thursday coming up, Thursday, 28th September 2017, 1900 hours or 7 p.m. British Standard Time, Ali Crooks on how to backtest. And it's going to be epic.
Maybe you should have backtested your crypto strategy, mate.
Yeah, maybe I should have done that. I just don't have it in me anymore. I am actually gonna. Right, I've got to get back on the back testing wagon, right? So, as everyone listening to this knows, I did a whole lot of front loaded effort for the MPR strategy from Traceable Gov, and I'm now reaping the rewards. I'm sitting here doing 15 minutes a day swing trading system. Look at it about 10:30 o'clock, you know, at night, because I back tested it on the European time. Daily candles, so the candle closes at 11 rather than 12. Smart move, thank you very much. And it still works on that.
Was that by design or by fluke?
No, it's deliberate. Yeah, it's completely deliberate. Because when I was first doing it, I was like, well, I'm not going to be up at 11:59 every day, but I can be up at 10:59 just about. Unless I've had one beer and then I'll fall asleep at 6. But now what I want to do is, now that I'm sort of basically the trading aspect of my life is about 15 minutes every night, want to crack on with my little Fibonacci pet project and see if I can create, using Ali's approach, using his backtesting methodologies, create my own edge in Fib retracements and extensions. And I've got an idea of what I think might work, but there's simply no way I will know until I've got lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of data along a whole bunch of different core strategies and side strategies and stuff. So I'll report back in the future.
Yeah, and I've got a theory. Do you want to hear my theory?
I'd love to hear your theory.
I think backtesting is akin to courage. I think, you know what they say, where everyone has a finite amount of courage, yeah? And once it's gone, it's gone. That well is gone. I think backtesting, you know, you use your well of backtesting energy to do that system. And I think you've got to replenish it before you can get back in and start testing again, because it does take discipline and hard work. And that's my theory on it. And also, does that sound legit?
Yeah, I think so. Is it an unreplenishable well? So no. if I'm like 10 years from now, that's it. Like, if I've used it all up to get these systems, that's it. I'm done.
You're gonna go and find Hobo Owen at the side of the road because you're in.
Come here, man. Let me tell you about a time I was a trader.
Okay. No, I think it's replenishable. I just think it takes time, because I know that you were pretty spent by the end of it.
I was like a little broken man.
And with backtesting, you know, my plea to listeners is that if you listen to us talk about backtesting and you've gone, you know, okay, I want to learn to trade technically, then just get yourself on this webinar. Listen to what Ali and what we've got to say. It's twoblokestrading.com/webinars. And you can sign up nice and quickly, nice and easily, and get yourself on it. You may as well. It's purely there. We've designed it so that it is valuable to you guys. So get on it.
Okay, so that's trading. Now, Tom, time for an announcement. Can you get the soundboard out?
No, I can't, because I'm under a blanket currently trying to record it, and so it doesn't sound like an echoey room. Hang on, let me just get it from under my blanket.
Absolute trading producer fail.
What do you want?
There you go, that'll do. All right, so everybody's worst nightmare in trading is that massive 1,000-year wave, that kind of perfect storm, that ginormous destructive event that comes along. I'm talking like Swiss National Bank in January 2015 type thing, where if you were long the Swiss franc, you got wiped out and people went, not just lost their accounts, went into negative balance of hundreds of thousands, some of them, and their broker were coming after them, you know, left, right, and center, taking their house, all sorts of stuff. Absolute disaster. And no one was at fault. There's nothing that you could do. If you had a stop loss, some of them were blown out. And it's that kind of that one in a million thing that happens once every 20 years. And if you just happen to be in the wrong currency at the wrong time, it could just ruin your career. And we've been talking about this a bit on Twitter recently. Total disaster. But, announcement, XDB, our partner broker, will become, as of 1st of October 2017, the first FCA-regulated broker to offer negative balance protection, which means no longer can your losses exceed your account balance. Once you hit zero, that's it.
So losses may exceed deposit. This is not so what they're saying, that warning will not be there now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's basically they're taking that on themselves, and saying, you know, we categorically will not come after you for your losses. I mean, I don't think they ever chase negative balance anyway, XDB. A lot of the big brokers do. You'd be surprised. And if you go and Google it, find out after SMB who went and hunted down people. But XDB are now saying, look, first UK FCA regulated broker to actually say, no, we won't. There's a commitment. They're not going to do it. And your losses cannot exceed your deposit, your account balance, which is actually monumental, because you can be long over the weekend, and if something ridiculous happens with North Korea or something, then you don't have to be worrying until Monday, oh, is my stop loss going to get filled, or am I going to lose all my money and my house? And yeah, brilliant. Sleep like a baby.
Right. So people listening going, that sounds pretty cool. Where can they go?
As it only comes live on the 1st of October, and we're recording this on the 22nd of September, there's no information on their website now. That will come in October. It is coming. It has been confirmed. Everyone that's already got an account has had an email. But if you go to twoblokestrading.com/XTB, you can get signed up with them now, and you can ask your account manager about it, and they'll give you all the information. And then from the 1st of October, all of that information will be on the website for you to see. But it's coming, it's official, it's confirmed. twoblokestrading.com/XTB.
Don't forget, if you go through that link as well, you're going to get that 15% spread rebate as well, which is obviously a nice to have.
Yes, and we will thank you.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Right, Thomas, straight into the interview.
This
This is a brilliant one. So firstly, the trading stuff. It's great because the guy that comes on, he is a discretionary trader. Anyone on Twitter will know who he is. But he has a diametrically opposed opinion of how to create an edge to everything we've done with Trade Support Club. And we love balance here, Tom, I think. It's fair to say.
Middle name is Balance.
Okay, good. Weird. And I think he balances out some of that sort of data-driven creating edge style. So that's great. But more hilariously than that, Tom, as the producer of the podcast, I have to say, you got totally edged out here. You completely took over.
Yeah, mate. Literally. So we normally get into a room and have a bit of a chat, precursor chat with our guests. But this time, we literally got into the room. He was like, press record. Let's start now. Let's go. And I was like, all right, okay. Pressed it. And you'll hear. Well, basically, we're going to roll straight into the kind of the precursor to the interview, which you'll hear. And then you'll hear. Anyway, you'll get it, guys. Yeah.
Suffice to say, Tom is sacked.
Look, here's what really grinds my gears. Okay. All these people on Twitter trying to become better people, all right? There is nothing more anal than that, because what's actually going on is they're trying to trade and failing. And then what they're trying to do is to compensate their failure in trading by exercising more, by learning a second language, by... I don't know, but a whole bunch of things, you know, it's like by doing yoga for 6 hours a day and meditation and things like this. And what I'm saying is that if you're fucking up your trading, it's never going to get better by you concentrating on other things. It's only going to get better by you concentrating on what's wrong, right? So, I mean, look, if you're having a troubled relationship and your girlfriend is angry with you, or your partner's angry with you, or your missus or whatever, right? And you say, oh, this is terrible. Then you compensate for that by going to the pub for the night and coming back at 4 a.m. It doesn't work, does it? So what you need to do is actually deal with the problem at hand and tell her to fuck off and get out of your life, right?
Get out the door.
Okay, yeah. Like, the sooner you do that, the happier you'll be. Okay, so I have a philosophy about life, and it's just about dealing with the problems that you have and focusing on them and not getting distracted. And I think there's a valuable lesson in there somewhere for all
in its own way. It's very inspirational, Will, in its own weird, fucked up way.
I try really hard, you know, but that's why they say, look, conventional wisdom is not always wisdom. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why a lot of traders fail, because they're reading forums. They're on. They're probably following me on Twitter. That's a big reason for failing. They listen to your blogs and all the guests that you have. And what happens is that there's a ton of information there, and if you realize, or you know, everybody knows that 90% of traders fail, and I don't really doubt that number, because I've probably met all 90 of them, right? When you're taking on board this information and you're saying, hey, here's trading wisdom, right? We need to do it like this because we read it on a forum. We need to do it like this because we heard it on a podcast from someone and what have you. What happens is you're just repeating what 90% of people do. And I think you have to learn to trust yourself a bit more, observe what the market is doing, learn to build a model of that, and then learn to take advantage of it. So, conventional wisdom is not always going to be wisdom. That's my
takeaway. We haven't even started yet, and we should just finish it before we start. Forget the intro, forget all that. Just
I think so. I think we're done.
Publish that.
We're done here, mate. I'm off now.
All right. So I should probably tell people who we're speaking to.
That might help.
Right. So, official intro coming. Two Blokes Trading welcomes Will Hunter, otherwise known as WMD4X. He can be found on Twitter under that handle or at WMD4X.com. That's for the number. Will, hello. Welcome to the Two Blokes Trading podcast, although we've already been talking for a little while.
Hey, guys. A pleasure to be here.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Yes, it should be. And a pleasure to have you, I mean, is what I should say, isn't it? I was badly brought up. Sorry, Will. So, mate, so we've just talked about it a little bit, unconventional wisdom, and that's kind of the theme for the day here, isn't it? We're going to be talking about a number of things, but one of them, and probably the place we would start after our intro, will be all about why maybe a statistical data-driven edge isn't where you should build the foundation of your trading. So that's a little teaser. First of all, who are you? Why are you here?
I'm Will Hunting. I'm a Forex trader. And you guys said you would make me famous.
You're a trader. You're on Twitter. But you've been a trader for 15 years, something like that?
We're talking about 12 years now, thereabouts. Okay. So end of 05, 06 was when I got hooked on this crack cocaine. And I've been hooked on it ever since. I've not even tried rehab. Rehab doesn't work, right? So, you know, you can get out of this, but you're always going to come back, and it's going to be on something stronger, right? So
fair enough. There you go. We say on this show a lot, don't quit. If you quit trading, that's when you failed. So there you go. The other reason to not quit is you'll end up taking up heroin, so good reason not to.
I think so. Or, you know, most people quit by jumping from the top of tall buildings, right? So
yes. Sad, because it's true.
We don't want that.
No, absolutely not. And so you have built up a real Twitter following. You're being modest, because you're fond of a live call. And could you give us a little bit of a very brief, because we've only got 24 minutes left already, a very brief introduction as to, you know, what your trading style is, Will?
All right, so I'm a discretionary trader, and in principle, what I'm doing is trading momentum, I'm trading flow, I'm trading patterns. It's an eclectic mix of a lot of different types of trading, but what I like to focus on is the decision-making process that leads up to actually pulling the trigger and committing money to a position, right? But if I had to describe it, I'm a discretionary pattern trader who trades patterns and flow and exhaustion and support and resistance and momentum. I think the greater part of what I do is probably momentum trading, right? And it's done in a discretionary way. So I'm picking and choosing the trades that I want to take. And I'm not there kind of trying to systematically take every single trade and leave myself open to the market like that. So okay. A lot of it is built on a decision-making process, but there is some element of gut and feel which is involved as well.
Okay, which is interesting, because we have had now a number of episodes, and the way that myself and Tom have been learning to trade over recent weeks has been the data and statistical driven model. So spend enough time with the charts to find what looks like an edge, then decide the rules, go back through either on an automated simulator or manual backtesting, collect all the data over a significant period of time, number of different currency pairs, whatever it might be, and then crunch the numbers and say, okay, I have now proven this edge, trade that edge accordingly in forward testing, stick to the rules, don't be a lemon, do what you know you're supposed to do, and you should therefore make a commensurate amount of profit that your backtesting would have indicated. And there are lots and lots and lots of people that trade that and make money doing that. But your approach is to reject that and do something slightly different.
Okay, so it's okay. I think I can be easily misunderstood. What I would say is that I'm not evangelical about any particular method, but I know what works for me. And I think it's more important to build a model on what the market is doing right now and trying to take advantage of that versus trying to build a model of what the market did over the course of the last 5 years. And so I would rather take a statistical edge, and I'm kind of doing that whole 90s things with quotes with my fingers when I'm saying a statistical edge, right? But a statistical edge from price action last week rather than a statistical edge from price action over the course of the last 10 years. And if I can give you a quick example of that, if we go back to, for example, if we go back over the course of the last 100 years or something, and I would say gaps, what's your opinion? What happens, right? And is there a way to take advantage of gaps? And what you're going to say is, well, I've gathered all of this statistical data. What the statistical data proves is that actually, you know what? Some gaps fill and some gaps run. And I really don't know, right? And there might be a little bit of a leaning there one way or the other, depending upon exactly how much data you gathered. Whereas if we go back to, for example, post the GFC, so it's that kind of 2007-2008 period, and all of the gaps that happened after that, what we noticed was that pretty much most of the gaps, I'm talking 90% plus, after 2007-2008 filled, and not only did they filled, but they followed through after filling. But if we were to take all of the gaps which have happened in the last 2 or 3 years, you would notice that 90% of those gaps in the Forex markets actually ran. Okay, now, if I'm taking the information which is just based upon my most recent experience with these gap formations which happen on Forex charts, and a gap were to occur this weekend, my expectation would be that the gap's going to run, right? So, so I don't know whether you would put that or how you could frame that inside, for example, a statistical method. What I'm really interested in is the most recent data. In short, what I'm saying is that I think the longer the period or the further back you go to arrive at a number, the chances that that number is less accurately reflecting the current market actually increases. I'm happy to back an observation that I made last week, but an observation that's been made over 5 years or 10 years actually starts to become meaningless. If you notice that inside bars are reversing a lot recently, that's something I can happily put money behind. But if you were to take the statistics over a much longer period and say, hey, do inside bars reverse or do they follow through? I think that those statistics would end up being pretty much inconclusive. You know, it's like saying, do triangles break out as continuation or do triangles give you a reversal? The longer the period of the data that you look at, the more inconclusive it comes. And actually, instead of becoming an edge, it becomes a disadvantage. You know, it just becomes an exercise that you've done for its sake, but it doesn't have a practical, useful purpose.
Okay. Because what we have here then is two different philosophies that are sort of opposed but espoused by profitable traders on both sides. Because on the one hand, you have the data-driven guys like our friends over at Trader Support Club who would say that you have to avoid recency bias because it's a human natural instinct to place too much emphasis on what has just happened. But you're saying that things that have happened a long time ago by the nature of history and distance from the present become less relevant to actually the more recent stuff is the most relevant. But is it what you say there, you're not evangelical, you're not dogmatic, it works for you. Do you think that the other thing can work, that there are people that it is possible to trade that for profit as well?
I think a lot of this depends actually on the way that you approach gathering your data. So the first kind of objection that I have is that the longer the period over which you've gathered that data, the more meaningless it becomes, because you go from the situation where you might, for example, have an idea that, say, 3/4 of the time a particular price behavior will exhibit. And when you take that over a longer period of time, you end up actually much closer to 50-50, right? And I don't know if 55-45 is an edge for me, even 60-40 is an edge for me, or even 70-30 is an edge for me. I like the idea that you witness a particular behavior in the market a lot. I'm going to lean towards 100%, although it's kind of a crazy number to lean towards. But you'd say, look, I've observed this so many times, and every single time it's the same thing which is happening. And you can do that over a short period of time and then have a reasonable expectation that the market will repeat. And that's what trading patterns is about. If you're a pattern trader, you have to believe that markets repeat and market behaviors repeat. So that's one. The other objection that I have, and it's not so much about a statistical method, but it's about the way that people gather those statistics. So if you're doing something like a visual backtest, I think that visual backtests are notoriously unreliable. It's going to be full of confirmation bias. The only way you can really do a proper backtest is to do it with algo, to use some kind of software to find every single instance of a particular structure or pattern that you're looking for and you want to observe. So I think visual backtests, they're notoriously unreliable. I think a lot of people who are trying to follow a statistical method are doing visual backtests. There are going to be some superhumans who are able to do that, right? But yeah. I think the majority of people, they're going to slip and they're going to miss a lot of things, and there is going to be confirmation bias, and they're going to be finding actually what they're looking for, right? So there are a lot of holes there in that particular process, and you have to be very careful about filling those holes.
Okay. So just to move it forward then to the next logical thing. So what you're saying sounds like it has total validity, and clearly you've proven over 12 years that this approach, and there are a number of other discretionary traders out there making good money doing this, but they often seem to have the same thing in common, which is that they're very experienced guys. And it seems to me that there is a if you can't, say, I don't know, spend 6 months backtesting something and then go and trade it, which, you know, most people could get to that level in 6 months or a year. If we're talking about here about needing to be able to see things in real time or have enough experience to know what this is, and, you know, this behavior is now starting to recur more and more, and to have a certain number of patterns and setups that you can see, do you think that there is a higher barrier to entry for new traders or less experienced traders to then try and undertake this way of trading?
I don't think that the bar is higher or lower than any other method. A lot's going to depend on your personality type. So if we take, for example, mechanical trading, systems trading, there are advantages and disadvantages to that too. And I think the biggest disadvantage I found in systems trading, because I've tried it, there isn't anything that I haven't tried, is that a system expects you to take every single trade that meet the criteria. And that includes every single losing trade. And it includes a run of losing trades. And I'm not the type of person that can do that without losing faith in the system as a whole. As a person, I just don't have the heart or the emotional stability to deal with that. And so I have a lot of respect for professional system traders who keep going until they go broke. It's like I said, there's advantages and disadvantages to everything. I don't think the bar is any higher, but discretionary trading, it suits my personality type.
Yeah,
I like being right.
Do what works for you.
I like being right, and I like being right often. What discretionary trading allows me to do is to cut out the losing trades. It allows me not to have to take them. It allows me to commit when I want to commit, when the circumstances seem right. Okay, so there are a lot of systems traders out there as well who actually don't even know that they're not systems traders. You know, they behave in a way which outwardly would appear that what they're doing is systematic, but actually they apply a lot of discretion. So if you're a systems trader and you're, for example, adjusting your position size on different trades, right? And there isn't a rule for that. It's just gut and feel. You know, I'm just going to go half our risk on this. Okay, what's that? It's discretionary trading, isn't it?
Even though it's called money management, it's still discretion, isn't it?
Yeah, and so it's not. I don't think it's a very, you know, I don't think it's a straightforward kind of thing. I think proper professional systems traders, if you're going to do that, the only way you can do it is by actually using algos and just letting the machines do the trading, and you devise the system and you monitor them and things like that. But once you have a framework, and I think the framework is important. You know, there's a decision making process, and if you have a framework for that, and given a bit of time, and there's going to be some trial and error, you can become quite competent through that process of discovery for the patterns that you're using.
Okay, and that was really going to be my next question. And so we tweeted out yesterday, sort of questions from the floor, if you like, for this interview, and we had a lot of response, and a lot of they came on two key themes. And one of the themes is what I want to touch there, and what you just touched on, which is really how do you, when you're trading discretion rather than a system, in inverted commas, how do you build? And I'm trying to sort of amalgamate a few questions here, but how do you build your knowledge and confidence in your discretionary ideas? What you've discussed there or mentioned there as a decision-making framework. And so one exact question from at LedgeTrader81 on Twitter, what process or processes do you use to monitor and eliminate mistakes from your trading decisions? So in effect, how do you get better at discretionary trading?
Okay, so... okay, I'm going to do a big exhale, right? How'd you get discretionary trading? I think that it's all about focus, right? So when you're a discretionary trader, you're going to take as many hits as the next person when you're starting out. What is important is, like what I mentioned before, to have a good decision-making process, and that becomes your edge. Now, the way that you get better is, and And I think the way that I define it is to say that your goal is not actually to be winning trades, right? Because you're going to get better at what you're focusing on. And a lot of traders, what they tend to do is to focus on trying to have good winning trades. So what I'm saying is your focus is not about having good winning trades. That's not your goal. I think the winners tend to happen all by themselves anyway. So if you make your aim to always be avoiding the bad ones, and that is your goal ultimately when you're trading, and if that becomes your aim, you're going to end up refining your framework. You're going to get better at avoiding the bad trades, right? So I think really it's just a question of focus and to be asking the right questions and then answering those questions. So what? And I think that this is genuinely something that tends to happen. A lot of people, they're just too focused on the good trades and winning a trade, but they've never thought about how to cut out the losing trade. So when you start thinking about that, you start finding the reasons why you shouldn't be taking those trades in the first place. And then a lot of your time is actually spent avoiding trades rather than trying to get into the market, right? So if you came to the market, hit your charts and said, said, right, let me look for a reason to stay out. You know, rather than to hit the charts and say, right, let me look for a reason to get in. It really does turn things upside down, and you start working in a way which is very different to what the textbooks will teach you.
Okay, I mean it is a complete reversal of many other ways of trading. I suppose it still has that same point, which is caution, defensiveness, and staying alive, surviving. You know, and risk management, I suppose, is the catch-all term. It's building that into the very framework with which you're taking trades. Is that something that comes with experience? There's a natural exuberance of the early trader, though, isn't there? Of, oh yeah, that will do. You know, take that. That will do. Take that. That will do. Take that. Do you think you can learn it without doing?
Yeah, I was watching a documentary about the rise in gambling in the UK, and they had this one couple on there, and the lady one night, she went onto one of these bingo sites and started playing, and she won £10,000 in that first night. And one of the comments that this couple made in this documentary was that this was the worst possible thing that could happen to them, because after winning £10,000, they went on to lose about £40,000, maxing out credit cards, taking overdrafts from the bank, borrowing money from friends and family, believing that they were on a roll. And I think that if traders get lucky, and I wouldn't really describe it as anything other than luck, because I've been there. But if you get lucky early, you're really setting yourself up for a massive fall, right? So I think if you failed early on, you become more aware of the risks associated with what you're doing. You can be a little bit more humble and a little bit more cautious in the way that you approach the market and just understand the risk that's involved and what it is that you're trying to achieve overall.
And I suppose if you're doing this sort of that data-driven approach, it's easy to, and maybe that's why it attracts me and some other people, is you can say you can create very strict rules. You know your expectation because that's what happened in 2016, that's what happened in 2015. And it gives you a nice framework for staying within the rules, and the more discretion you eliminate, the easier it is basically to not go bust, until otherwise, as you've said, that situation where your system is broken but you follow it into the ground because of the previous data. But that aside, so with this discretionary trading, it seems like you're going to be always learning, always adapting, really have to be focused and in tune with the markets, and that can lead to arrogance and cockiness if you have a winning period much more easily, I'd thought. So do you think it's something that you have to be even more aware of, when you can almost, like, you can take credit for your good trades because you're a discretionary trader?
With discretionary trading, it really does require you to trust yourself and trust your decision-making ability. And it lets you refine your process or method on a bespoke basis, right? So you can adjust to whatever the market is doing at any given time. And when you win, you do tend to win a lot. You can go from, you can grow an account very, very quickly. The key as well with discretionary trading is that when you're losing, you can stop. And that is a part of your discretion, say that the immediate model that I've built up isn't really working anymore. And look, when you've built up a model based upon 10 trades, if three or four trades go against you, right? So now you're 14 trades in. Your original model was built on an observation of 10 setups, and now you've now the total is say 14, but four of them have gone sour. You'd say, hang on a minute, we've kind of gone from 80-90% expectation down to about 40% or something, right? If your observation is built on 500 setups, okay, and you've had 10 bad trades, your expectation has gone from 70% to 69.9 or something, and you're going to take another 10 bad ones and another 10. You know, how many times do you have to go wrong before you can stop? So there is a way, you know, that there is a way that I think about what I'm doing, and it factors in the current market and what the market is doing right now. Right. So if the market isn't behaving as I expected it to behave, I get out. I'm prepared to change my mind. A really good example of that are a couple of trade plans, which I published last week and this week. So last week I was short the Euro Canadian and consequently stopped out. I came back to it this week. The price is at exactly the same level. Right. But I can see the short isn't working out, right? I tried the short, didn't work. I went long, 200 pips up in 24 hours, right?
Boom. So,
yeah, right. So,
and there's no system in the world really that allows you to do that.
No, because I think if you were looking at a system and you'd be looking at a mathematicalized, if that's even a word, but a mathematicalized view of the market, it would say signal equals sell, and it would remain at signal equals sell for a very, very long time. Whereas I'm able to look at the market and it's a level to me, and either the level is going to breach or the level is going to hold. Last week, I thought the level was going to breach. It didn't. So I said, well, if it's not breaching, it's holding. It's just very simple logic, and it's the ability to kind of apply that and follow through by committing to a position and come out with a good winning trade. So and that is typically the way that I work and think and move forward.
Okay. And so, right, we're already running out of time, but I received a number of questions along exactly the same line, which I think we get if whenever we ask for questions for an interview. You know, you've got a followership on Twitter, and they want to know. And so one guy in particular, Front Foot FX, what is your long-term strategy in detail? And you've got about 5 minutes.
All right. I've got 5 minutes. Is that all? Yeah, we need about 5 weeks. Right?
That's the thing with the podcast, trying to get strategies out.
All right. So here it is. All right. As a trader, the first thing that you need to do is to decide what it is that you are trying to do. Right? Okay. And it might sound really odd or strange, right? But what you have is, a lot of people come to the markets looking for setups, right? They're just looking for a setup. What's the setup? How do you get into the market? And I think it's the wrong question to ask. What you have to decide is, what is it that I'm trying to do? If you're able to answer that question, you will find the setups and find the actions that you have to undertake that match the goal, that match the objective that you've determined. So, I trade momentum, right? Now, momentum trading for me is that if the price moves up, I'm going to assume it's going to move higher. And if the price moves down, I'm going to assume it's going to go lower. So what I typically do, and this is something that you will notice in the trade plans that I publish every single week, is that I mark a level above the price and I mark a level below the price. And I say, you know, if the price breaks above that particular level, that level to me has been marked based on my experience. And I believe that that is what I call a point of no return, right? So once the price has gone past it, it's just got to keep on going. It can't turn around and go back. And so once the price has gone past the point of no return, I say, look, there's a good buy trigger there. And if I've marked a level which is below the current price, if the price drops and goes through that, say, right, we're through a point of no return, it means that the price is just going to simply carry on going, right? So that's momentum trading. Flow trading, in a nutshell, is just looking at the direction of price. So I say, if we're up on the week, let's assume that we're going to have an up weekly candle. And if we're going to have an up weekly candle, we should be buying early in the week. And if the price is breaking down through the weekly open, then I'd say, right, the flows turn bearish. And so if the price is trading below the weekly open, let's assume that we're going to have a down candle this week. And therefore, what we should be doing is selling. And if we're doing that early in the week, or if we're looking at the price changing direction around our key flow level, so there's the weekly open and there's the monthly open, and those are the primary ones which I like trading. And then there is the daily open, but I think you have to be really good and quick, nimble fingered, if you like, if you're going to be trading flow around the daily, particularly early in the day, right? So it's flow trading, and that's what flow trading is. And then if you understand what it is you're trying to do, just trying to trade a direction here, when you're looking at those flow levels, it actually becomes quite easy to see what the price does, how it behaves around those levels, and then just to slowly start taking advantage of that. I do a lot of exhaustion trades as well. So I've been doing this thing with the end of wave taser on Twitter recently. It's a little bit of fun, but trying to forecast where a wave is going to complete using a price action technique, and then to catch a full wave reversal. And I think I've done about 7 or 8 of those now over the course of the last 8 weeks. And every single one has been a winner. I haven't had a losing one yet.
Right? They've been very popular. I can see on Twitter a lot of people are enjoying it. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, so I think the last one which I did was gold, right? So, you know, everyone was buying at 13.50 or whatever. I must have been the only seller because the price dropped $50, right? So right, but if you've decided that I'm trying to forecast the end of wave, you can start playing around with price action techniques and find the ones which will aid you in finding the end of wave, right? And that's all that I've done with that taser technique. It's a simple diagonal line, really, more than anything else, or a little bit of a fan connected between points that I've learned to recognize. But I know that that technique is useful for forecasting the end of wave, and that's what I use it for. So that's momentum, that's flow, that's exhaustion. There's patterns, but it's hard to explain patterns without actually drawing them and demonstrating what they do. But in a nutshell, it really is, I have an idea of what it is that I want to do. And then I have the setups, or I've found setups that help me achieve those objectives. Yeah. And what you really have to be careful is to be taking the setups on their own without knowing what they are for. And it's that old adage, you know, if you've got a hammer in your hand, everything looks like a nail. And a lot of traders, they walk around with hammers in the hand. You know, they have a setup, and it's that same setup for everything, regardless of the market condition, regardless of the time cycle that we're in. So there's a lot of cyclical influences in the Forex markets. So for example, typically at the beginning of the year, I'm a flow trader. I like trading the yearly flow because it's an opportunity to make a huge number of pips. Right. So I'm a flow trader. And then as we transition out of the first couple of months, I do a lot of momentum trading. At this time of year, as we go through September, October, I start becoming interested in end of wave, mean reversion, price reversals. And then at the tail end of the year, it's all about momentum again. And that's typically how the Forex markets tend to move on a cyclical basis. So I have a set of tools, and I understand the market cycle and when it's appropriate to be using those tools. And so I just try to pick the right tool for the job. And again, I guess that defines the discretionary space, I think. You know, it's just about picking the right tool for the job, but having the facility to do that, the luxury of being able to do that and not being tied down by a whole bunch of mechanical rules that have been based on X years of observations that may just not be relevant anymore. That's my final dig.
Got to get it in there. I appreciate it. You've just blown my way of trading out the water. There you go.
You're welcome.
But that was fascinating, that last part there, especially in, I've never heard an analysis of a yearly, almost seasonal approach to trading the markets in put in such a way. So that was brilliant. And I think a lot of people will like what they hear. So people can check out WMD4X.com. That's four as in four. And also at WMD4X on the Twitter as well. It's been great. There's loads of resources on your website as well, you know, free stuff, videos, all sorts of things. So I know it can be hard to get over a strategy in 5 minutes on a podcast, so people can go there and find out a little bit more.
Even harder in 140 characters.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's why I got invented pictures and videos.
Exactly.
But Will, it's been an absolute pleasure. Will Hunting, not Hunter, and it's been great. I'm absolutely certain we'll get you back on the podcast soon once you've recovered from this particular exertion.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been fun.
Thanks, Will. Hey, halfway through, I had a really smug face on when he was basically going, you know, those guys on Twitter that like try and perfect themselves and like but try and become better traders by being better people and all this kind of stuff. I'm thinking of our conversation last week, Owen, and
Will is your soulmate.
Will is literally like just fucking idiots.
He equally hates anyone that's trying to better themselves. So, you know, with two people in the world hold that opinion, it must be valid.
Legit, mate. Therefore, in my book, Will's a good guy, regardless of whether or not he mugged me off and sacked me and made me obsolete.
The best thing about it is he's been literally sending me ideas of how we should edit it and what we should do and everything.
I know. Will, get back in your box, mate. Get out of my territory.
Mate, I'm going to get rid of you. You're really? You're gone, mate. Go and leave. Fucking gardening leave.
Yeah, nothing will get done, mate, if I'm not here. You know it.
It's fine, mate, because everything you do, Will will do. It's fine. It's not a problem. And he'll do it out of the good of his heart. Anyway, I'll keep all the cash. It's fine. Yeah, great interview. Really enjoyed it. A little bit of my bum is kind of doing this, and you can probably guess what my fingers are doing when I'm hearing about discretionary trading. I was going to say that? I have a fucking ass, but I thought it might be too much.
You can't. Instead, you try to give try to describe it with your arsehole and fingers.
I wish I wasn't so naturally crude. Anyway, maybe what I should have said was, hey, it's squeaky bum time.
Yes.
When we're talking about discretionary trading, because I've now got my happy little place where I have my rules. I just keep doing it. I keep clicking a button when I know I should click the button, and I've done the work and it's going to work and I'm making money. When someone sits there and goes, oh no, basically every single day I've got three different things I use. I kind of look at the market. I can see what's happening and I make discretionary calls. I don't know. That's like something that's quite scary again, isn't it?
Yeah, and in the interest of balance, Owen, I would say that everyone has their own way of doing it. As long as it works well for you, then just focus on that.
Exactly. He's not evangelical or dogmatic. Those are the people we like. He makes money doing it that way. Lots of other people do. Lots of people make money doing it another way. 70 episodes in, that's what we worked out. You can do whatever the hell you want. As long as you do it well, you'll make money.
Yeah, and I like the fact that Will makes calls, you know, live calls on Twitter, and he gets out there and gets stuck into conversations. And obviously, you know, he is a smart guy who's spent time learning the markets and learning about the cycles within the markets and how it operates, which again is something that I don't think I have dug into in enough detail. I don't know about yourself.
Not really, no. But then it was like Brannigan was saying last week that, you know, there's like a billion things to learn. And as long as you could do one thing well and make money, then you're a good trader. You don't have to know and understand everything you see on Twitter or everything someone says.
Yeah.
right, I'm knackered, mate, and I've got a sore throat and it's really hot in this room and you're under a blanket and I've used up all my chat like a long time ago.
Thanks for listening to the Two Blokes Trading podcast with Tom and Owen. Be sure to subscribe and check out twoblokestrading.com, and we'll see you back here next Monday.